The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to The Muskie 360 Podcast. We got Joe on the line. What are you doing, Bucher?
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy. I'm excited about how this latest vlog has just like been a powder keg. It's just like, it's really cool to see the response we're getting from the vlogs. And now this particular vlog, I answered a question that is the most asked question. And we're going to do that on a regular basis, of course, and we're really tapping into Muskie 360.
Absolutely.
Folks, more than anything else. So you folks listening to, if you got a question, you know, and you haven't had it answered and you want it answered, you know, get that question to us so we can do it. But this question we're going to talk about today is a big one.
Big one.
Yes. Reading water. How do you read water? And, you know, that's been really one of my fortes all these years. You know, it's really funny, you know, because back in my early days of guiding, a lot of the early guiding I did, I'll go back further than this, but the early guiding, when I first got in the business, I didn't know a lot of these waters up there. I knew some, you know, I had some, you know, like a lot of, you had up here, as you know,
You got so many bodies of water.
You got so many lakes, you know, it's and you know, not overly large ones, but you know, lots of them and what a diversity. And anyways, where I'm going with this is very often I would be hired by a lodge or be in a group with other guides. Back in the day, Steve, there was a lot of group guiding.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that doesn't happen a lot anymore.
No.
Back in the day, you know, there would be a big group of folks that would come and, you know, rent out a lodge for a week, you know, corporate group or something. And then they would hire out, you know, 8, 10, 15 guides. And so we would all end up fishing a lot of the same water. And where I'm going with this is, you know, I end up going, hey, we're going to so-and-so lake or so-and-so chain today. And I go, okay, I've never been there.
Fake it till you make it, baby. Fake it till you make it. Yeah.
So, you know, it's you know, so the pressure's on. And And you know, so I had to really learn how to read water quickly. And that didn't mean following the other guides.
Right.
You know, that meant, you know, because you can only do that so long. You have to go find your own fish and find your own spots. And that was the challenge. And but before I was guiding, even, you know, when I was a teenage angler, it was fun. Once I got my driver's license and I was off the fishing, on the road and not fishing my home waters anymore, in the very early days of local tournament fishing, it was really a cool challenge to drop the boat in on a lake you never fished before. You know, and when we did it then, you know, you drop the boat on the day you fished the lake, the day the tournament happened, you say, okay, there you go, buddy, knock yourself out. Let's see what you can do in 4 or 6 or 8 hours. And so I was challenged from very early on. And don't forget, without GPS, without all these mapping systems, you know, and with just a flasher.
Right.
You know, the old green box flasher. Uh-huh. And so I developed some very unique ways of speed reading water that later on I taught them in my early muskie schools. And it was the subject of this vlog this week on my YouTube channel. And it's been a home run.
You know, and one thing to touch on that you said a few minutes ago about, you know, if you're listening to the podcast and you're using the app and you're asking these questions, we love this stuff because what a home run subject. And there's been such a great response to your vlog, you know, that we're doing the podcast on it. And anything you can think of, anything you're like, hey, we want to learn this or know this, let us know, because it helps us. It makes our life easier and gets us dialed in what you're doing.
Dialed in. Get dialed in and focused on giving these folks what they want.
And one thing too that I bring up on the podcast a couple times now, Mr. Buck Perry, you know Buck Spoon Plug and the whole deal. You used to write what fishing facts when he was there, yeah, correct?
Absolutely. I consider myself a serious disciple of Buck Perry.
Right.
Absolutely.
So when you said that about the tournaments, it's just like, you know, that's something Buck Perry used to do. He'd roll up to these tournaments sight unseen and just go out and crush people, and what that vlog covered and what we're covering now, I'm going to get deeper into here in a second, is essentially the basis of structure fishing through map analyzation.
Yes.
And you know, it's boring. Like, there's a big you used to, and it's a rarity for Book Daddy here to use a $5 word, but we should start there. You said littoral zone, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
I have it pulled up just for people that have a peanut sized brain like myself here on the internet. It says littoral zone. The littoral zone is near the shore area where sunlight penetrates all the way to the sediment and allows aquatic vegetation and plants to grow.
Correct.
So when you're talking littoral zone, for like a moron like me, why is that so important? Why is that so important in musky fishing, and how do we find it?
Well, here's the thing, you know, just to give you a little background, you know, Steve, I wasn't just you know, I wasn't just a beer drinking, you know, a guitar slinger in, you know, in the beer bars back in the day. I also did go to school, and you know, my major was in limnology and water resources, mm-hmm. and so I do have that kind of have that background.
You're edumacated.
Yeah, exactly. So I know just enough to be scary, you know,
right,
to make myself sound like I know something. But yeah, that in the vlog, you'll see me refer to the littoral zone a lot. And the littoral zone is the photosynthesis zone. It's mm-hmm. the plant zone. It's that area also that area above the thermocline, you know, where most of the activity takes place, you know, the warm water fishery takes place in that littoral zone. It's where the insects hatch and the bait fish, you know, hang out, and that's where the game fish is, where, you know, a lot of the food chain underneath the surface it takes place. And so when I refer to that in that vlog, and folks, if you haven't watched that vlog, please do, because the things that we're talking about here, you'll be able to refer to it and the conversation Steve and I are having. But where I'm, you know, where Steve is going with my conversation on a littoral zone is I developed many years ago, and you can do it real easy on today's mapping systems on your sonar, is to just take a map. If you're not into modern day technology and sonars, you can still do it with an old paper map, and this is the way we did it for years. Just take a map of the lake and just take a green magic marker and just color in, just like you did when you were a kid, you know, just having fun coloring things in, color in that 0 to 10 foot zone. Just color in from shoreline to 10 feet and just color that in all the way around the lake on your mapping systems, on your more sophisticated sonar units. You can just do that real easily. And what it does is it exposes the largest food shelves, the largest littoral zones in the lake. And when you do that, you take a lake, whether it's 100 acres, 1,000 acres, or 10,000 acres, or 100,000 acres, and you expose the large littoral zones, the large food shelves, the large food chains in the lake. And I like to keep it as simple as possible. And if you just visualize your favorite lake, and you know, it could be where you have a cabin or where you've been vacationing, or you may live on this lake. And if you just break it down like that, what you end up doing, folks, is you eliminate virtually 75 to 80% of the water. And now you're looking at those larger green areas. And now it's real easy, because all you do is you just go, okay, the largest green areas, this is the largest one, this is the second largest one, and so on. And then you just put a number on it. That's the number one, that's the largest littoral zone, the largest food shelf on the lake, one. And that's the second largest one, two, and three, and so on. All of a sudden you go, oh, wow, there's like a handful of real obvious spots here. And where I'm going with this is, you just eliminate you eliminate everything else and just focus on that, and it makes map reading real easy and lake mm-hmm. reading real easy. And then if you just take that concept and just apply to larger areas, larger lakes, larger systems, it even breaks them down. And that's, I still do this till this day. I will go out on big waters, you know, big strange waters, whether it's mm-hmm. Loch Sewell or Lake of the Woods or wherever it is, lakes around here. I take a new I take two or three new lakes, even around here in Wisconsin, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I go up and say, man, I've never been on this lake. I'm just going to go out there and fish it for 3 or 4 hours. And I do the, I go through the same process, and it works.
You know, one thing that, that you said about, you know, you can do it on modern electronics, which you can, you know, you can actually zone out your fish finders and stuff. There's something engaging, something that I think is lost if you're doing it electronically, though.
I agree.
Serious muskie angler and you've got like lakes 1, 2, and 3 that you're really focused on, get a paper map and do it, because I think seeing it when I've done this, you know, electronically and played around with it, it's just not the same as where I'm looking at the entirety of the place. It's sort of hard to see those zones in their entirety from your electronics, you know. But
yes,
I would encourage, and that's what I've done, is paper map and just go, okay, let's look at it. Because I think one thing that's big with the littoral zones, these shallow water, warmer vegetated zones, is finding those in conjunction. In your vlog, you talk about like main lake points, but looking for the structure in the attaching structure, the tie-ins to these things is deadly.
That's the next step.
Uh-huh.
So, folks, this is the next step. So once you've picked out the handful of larger, those key spots, those littoral zones, we can call it what you want to call it. You can call it a food shelf. You can call it these are the obvious noticeable spots. Now, you take spot number one and you go through it, and that'll be every single thing you can about that spot. Everything you can, you know, you don't concentrate on anything else, but spending lots of time fishing and learning all of the little nuances, you know, the little points and turns and high weeds and stumps and rocks and everything else that's around there. And you start learning each spot, you know, better. And this is a constant process from this point on. And then you just, you know, over time, over days, over weeks, over months, over years, you end up getting, you just get these spots so dialed in, you know where these fish are on those best spots.
Yeah.
And then also, you will also learn, folks, you will not only learn the nuances and the secrets behind each one of those spots, you're going to find out that, you know, maybe spot number four is better than spot number one in certain times of the year. That's going to happen too. And one other thing, you know, that I mentioned in this vlog that you know hasn't really been discussed that much yet, but it is definitely worth noting, is I also told folks to take a blue magic marker, and color in those noticeable the deepest water spots in that body of water.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you do that, all of a sudden you go, well, where's the deepest water? And you know, you can see there's open basins and stuff, but all of a sudden you see that, oh, here's one area of the lake that's really deep. And those become, you know, there's certain times of the year, notice, you know, most notably in the winter and you know, in the late fall, those are like early spring. Those are the key spots where these fish will hang out. And they also become, you know, key spots for, you know, for fishing suspended fish and all this other stuff. But, you know, I referred to in the vlog to, you know, the Storm Titan, which has been one of our most popular videos of recent.
Mm-hmm.
And the Storm Titan, his location, or that big fish's location, was like a textbook Musky 360 seminar.
Right.
You know, that fish was on, if you look at it, if you were flying in a drone, or you were, you know, you're sitting over top that lake, or you're looking at a map of that lake, you go, okay, where's the main point on this lake? Oh, it's right here. Okay, where's the deep waters lake? Oh, right, it's there. Right here. Oh, they're connected to each other. Okay, where's the largest food shelf in the lake? Well, it's kind of like the same spot. So that had all three things, and guess what? That's where the biggest fish, you know, and that's where I caught the Storm Titan. So it's like, oh, you know, it's like, see, it's not even species specific. This is the way you should approach
fishing.
You know, learn more. Exactly.
Absolutely. And the thing is like, I can't think of. Someone could argue rivers or something like that. If we're talking lakes, or lakes, reservoirs, you know, whether it's a puddle or whether it's Lake of the Woods, this will work.
Well, you know, and the thing too, Steve, is I try to keep this pretty simple. I do need to do future vlogs, and we need to do future podcasts on current and river systems. We definitely need to do that.
Yeah.
But you know, in a 15 to 20 minute format, and to give folks a really good game plan. As you can see, and you know me, I mean, it's pretty. Yeah. I try to keep things pretty simple and pretty focused on. Hey, this just
right,
you know,
right.
You've heard me say the old. You're using the term, so just run the play.
Yeah, run the play.
Just run the play.
And
okay, it's one of those things you got. You know,
yeah.
You know what your strength is. You know what your strength is. You know what the weakness is on the other side. You know, just so okay, let's just run this play and run it effectively. You know, I mean, let's face it. You know, you think about this. It's that way in music. A lot of times, people do all. You want to play as many notes as they possibly can inside a 12-bar blues, and they go, I don't remember any of that.
No.
And you remember, but when B.B. King or Albert Collins hits that one lick, you go, oh, that's Albert Collins. Oh, that's B.B. King.
Yeah.
Or that guy stole that lick from him.
But sounds good, yeah.
It sounds good, and it's iconic, and it's simple, and it's effective. And in fishing, folks, a lot of fishing is simple. It's not that complicated. And, you know, when you go into a sport shop today, you know, or you look at a sonar unit and you got multi-displays and you go, oh, my gosh, this. You look at a big body of water with a Lake of the Woods style body of water. You go, oh, my gosh, there's so many islands. And so it's like, how do I break this down? Well, this vlog makes it simple, and this podcast, and what we're trying to do here today is just, it's really much simpler than that.
One thing that, you know, with the longer form of the podcast, we can sort of dig into that is worth note, though. If we're talking about the vegetation base, these shallower littoral zones, right?
Right.
So that's bringing in cover. And the one thing is what you hear us say about vegetation, this transcends and works in the spring. It works in the fall. It works in the winter when these weeds aren't present. And one thing that you hit on that was huge, and I've been doing for the last 3 months down here in the South, is finding these shallow food shelves, right? Mm-hmm. And finding them adjacent to the deepest water in the lake, because that is just, it's just dynamite, because those fish are using that. They're coming up to feed in that littoral zone, in that shallower area where it's devoid of weeds. Currently, there might be a little bit of timber there. There might be some rocks. But once they come up, they do their business. They get something to eat. They're dropping back to that deep water. So finding,
and it's vertical. Yes.
It's vertical, which we could parlay into open water fishing here. But the first thing, and people ask me all the time, how do you catch these open water fish? I'm immediately looking for the same spot. I'm just casting the open water adjacent to it.
Well, Will, let's deal with the open water thing, you know.
Right, yeah, it's a whole other.
But I think you just hit on something that I did want to cover, and it's like, you think about the trip that you and I made in August last year. We didn't catch many fish in vegetation. No, we caught them over hard bottom.
Mm-hmm.
We caught them over rocks. And so, you know, shallow food shelves don't always have to have vegetation, but shallow food shelves get sunlight.
Yes.
Shallow food shelves, you know, whether it's a sandbar, whether it's a flat with a little grass on it, whether it's a rock bar, you know, whether it's a big rock point, underwater rock point, or a stumpy flat or stumpy bay. The let's just talk about rocks.
Yeah.
I catch tons of, you know, muskies on rocks. And, you know, the whole thing about the littoral zone, even as it relates to something outside of vegetation, is it gets photosynthesis, it gets sunlight, and because it gets sunlight, it has food, it has life on it. And, you know, you just take, you know, one of those AquaView style cameras. Just take one of those, you know, don't even look at your sonar, just take an AquaView. If you have an AquaView camera, just go over pretty much any spot that gets sunlight, and you go across it and just drift over it with the camera, you know, you will see there's life on it. There's crawdads, there's minnows, you know, there's things going on out there. And if there's life on it, hey, mudflats.
Yeah.
Just clean mudflats.
Yes.
That get sunlight. If they get sunlight, they have food on them, because they have sunlight, and because they have food on them, they're going to have predators on them.
I've done that a billion times where these places where it's just a featureless
that's
mud
flat. That's without exaggerating.
No, that's it. That's
a billion times.
That's people overlook that so often, and I guess you know what we're trying to convey. It doesn't have to be weeds. It does. It, you know, forget the weeds. The weeds are a tertiary element here in that zone. You know,
now that was a high. That was a big word.
Oh man, I'm sorry. I forgot I'm on the podcast. Back down here,
folks. This guy is fooling nobody. You're just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Not only as an angler, but as a musician as well. But getting back to our discussion here, I'll tell you, it's, you know, my approach. And this is approach that's, you know, it's been very successful me, as you know, through my whole angling career. From my early days as a bass fisherman to my full-time days as a walleye and muskie guide, you know, and it continues with me today is I try to just get rid of all the stuff around me and keep things real simple and run simple plays that work. Even, you know, it goes right down to my bait selection, you know, but it's when I go into a large, we really need to hit on this before we end our podcast is large bodies of water. It's like, you know, I take on a new section of Lake of the Woods every year, spots I've never been on. I take them on every year. Sections of the lake I've never been on. And why? One is the challenge. Two is, you know, to get away from boat traffic and places that got a lot of fishing pressure. And by the way, when I'm fishing on a busy time of the year, for example, early July, when I go to Lake of the Woods, it's busy.
Yeah.
It's busy. I still find sections of water that have no traffic on them because I pick out sections of the lake that are away from resorts and away from lodges and I, you know, then I just drive till I don't see anglers, and then I go, okay. Then I look at my map and go, I go right through the same process. I go, okay, these are the largest, these are the 5 or 6 or 10 food shelves I'm going to concentrate on today. Boom, 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 boom. On my hand, I go, okay, these are 5 spots I want to hit in the next couple hours. I want to hit these 4 or 5 spots. And if you do that, folks, you're going to be successful. And here's another thing is especially on these bigger bodies of water, we have a lot more options is as soon as you have some success. And I talked about this in my vlog, as soon as you start to have some success, and in the muskie world, success is follows even.
Yeah.
Because now you have, okay, there's fish here. There's a muskie here. You know, this is a common denominator. You found a good spot, but now you've verified there's a muskie here. Now what you want to do is duplicate that again and again and again. The larger bodies of water, this is kind of a fun process. My old buddy Roland Martin, you know, years ago, he wrote a book on this called Pattern Fishing. And he's so right. I mean, you know, he did it on reservoirs down south. These big bodies of water in Canada. What is it? Same thing, pattern fishing. Okay, you're finding them on, for example, you know, one of the big things in July is there's two cool things in July that I hit on Lake of the Woods, and they're opposites.
Mm-hmm.
One is the sunny sand beach pattern, and I'll go and check a couple of them. And if they're fish are, if I after 3 or 4 of them, I hit them and fish are in them, I'm going to go hit as many sun-baked, no wind, sandy beaches as I can. And I just start going, looking at the map, going, ding, 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 ding. Okay. And then I run, right, I drive, yeah, and I look at the spots and I go, nope, there's not sand. Oh, nope, the sun isn't right. The wind's in there. And you can, pretty soon you can go, you can eliminate these things visually before even stopping them. And the other thing I catch a lot of these fish on early in the year is just shallow rocks, you know, that get a lot of sun exposure. And if I start scoring on fish in those spots, and I just start checking off a whole bunch of them that I want to try in that area. And if I see a muskie, okay, then I want to duplicate it again and again. And I run that play over and over and over again.
One thing I want to pick your brain about, and I know people have been asking and want to know, when we're talking about these main points, right?
Yes.
You know, and how important that they are on small bodies of water, big bodies of water, it doesn't matter. Sort of explain to the listeners your thought process on how you're going to fish a main point, you know, because identifying it on the map's the easy part, but how do we properly fish that? And then also, too, one thing that's overlooked is the secondary point that's there as well. You know, a lot of times you're going to have your main lake point with a secondary point there or structure or element. Like, what's your approach to fishing these main lake points?
Well, here, you know, I want to take what you just asked me and take it to another level, because I've had this question asked, you know, on and on again. What about these bowl lakes that don't have a main lake point? They usually have one underwater.
Yeah, that's why I was saying secondary point. Yes. Yeah, because it's, so, yeah.
You know, if you look at your map, folks, and you do that color, you know, that little exercise in
get
coloring
the
in
crayons.
The 0 to 10 foot. Get your crayons or your magic marker out and color in the 0 to 10 foot zone. You know, one of my two or three of my favorite lakes are in northern Wisconsin. They're just bowl shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at them and go, oh, there's no point on this lake, but oh yes, there is. You know, it's under the water, and we call them bars. You know, mm-hmm. They're under. Back in my old Boulder Junction guide days, you know, I remember that. You know, one of the big things was, you know, there was all these famous bars. You know, on Trout Lake there was Halverson's Bar, and on Big Lake there was the Moss Bar, and Never Fail Bar. There were all these names,
right?
And these spots, they were basically points. They're large points that if you suck 10 feet of water out of that lake, they're an exposed point. Mm-hmm. But because of the water level, and this is very true in reservoirs,
the water level
fluctuates a lot, and you deal with that a lot. Mm-hmm. It's fluctuating water level. So, you know, when the water's low, that's an exposed point. When the water's high, it's an underwater bar.
That's actually, there's an old Buck Perry video where he goes to reservoirs. Have you ever seen this? When they're drained? Like when they're way down for winter pool.
Yep.
And breaks them down. Yep. And that's one thing for you Southern guys listening. Like when they're lowering these things, that is when you get in your kayak or you get in your John boat and you go out there and look.
Well, because, see, we have the same thing up here, Steve.
Yeah.
You know, they drop down. We have a lot of reservoirs up here too. You know, a lot of them, they call flowages. They're low-lying reservoirs.
Right.
And they drop them down because of winter thaw. So they drop them down in the fall.
Same thing, get them prepped
point
for
the winter, yeah. And then when they get the big thaw in the spring, you know, then they'll start to rise again, and you know, that's a great time to learn these bodies of water and get a visual,
mm-hmm.
You know, really get a visual on these spots, and honestly, even when I travel down south, there are some of my favorite waters in Florida. They do these periodic scheduled what they call drawdowns. And they will draw these bodies of water down to destroy excessive weed growth,
mm-hmm.
Hydrilla, and milfoil growth. They will actually purposefully draw these waters down 10, 15, 20, 30 feet sometimes or uh-huh. more and expose them for a year.
Oh, wow.
You know, to kill the plant life. And in Florida, it's a real popular concept. Especially on private waters where, you know, the landowners will go, hey, we're just going to put up with low water for a year to kill off some of this excessive weed growth. Well, it's a great opportunity for the angler to really learn the topography in a body of water, you know. So, but to answer your question further on fishing these points, I said earlier, you know, once you've recognized one or two main lake points,
mm-hmm.
or underwater bars, whatever it could be, you know, in the situation, now you go and you actually spend some time really slowly, thoroughly fishing these bodies of water and learning how they're really configured. And what you're going to find for the most part is that maps are inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes, by the way, also, folks, with modern day mapping.
Fact.
Modern day mapping is only so good.
Yep.
And you'll see, you know, the configuration on even an electronic map will show you it's shaped like a banana.
Right.
You know, but when you actually, or just a big fingered point. And then when you actually start fishing, you go, well, wait a minute, you know.
What's this over here? Yeah.
Yeah. This is way going way out further than, you know, this map said it did. And, you know, then there's all these goofy fingers coming off. And then there's, you know, you're going to find all kinds of, you know, then you're also going to find, by the way, you're going to find underwater, you know, fingers of rocks. You're going to find, you know, man-made fish cribs and sunken timber, and who knows what else you're going to find on spots like that. And you only find that, you know, through, you know, thorough fishing and learning the spot better. And one of the things I did what's really funny is I really haven't looked at it in a long time, but it's been sitting, it's in a file here. I have a file cabinet full of the old guide maps I had that I marked up. Mm-hmm. And
I'll take those, please.
It'd be kind of fun to look at those, sometime, because Steve, there, those were all my notes, and
Northern Wisconsin gold, folks, is what we call that.
What's kind of funny about that is that, all of them were from, I come in from a day of guiding or a mm-hmm. day of scouting when I wasn't guiding, and I go, boy, I really learned something here today. These fish are doing this, and this spot was really different. Or you find spots that didn't even exist mm-hmm. on a map. We still have, folks, we still have maps. And this is even in Wisconsin. It's up here. We still have maps that are so poorly laid out and so poorly marked. I don't know, when somebody put this map together, they had to be blind or drunk.
Or both. I was about to say, until you've seen like the way they scan them now, right? They just put a guy out there in a boat, and it's some kid in his 20s. It's a college intern that's probably hung over, and he's just driving 80 miles an hour. And that's how they're scanning these things a lot of time. And it's just like you're getting a snapshot of one day. And if the guy felt like doing a good job a lot of times.
Well, in modern day sonar equipment, if you have the right technology in your sonar, these will remap these spots. And if they're, mm-hmm. They can be connected to, I know Navionics and some of these other folks have these where it updates and upgrades the mapping systems.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, everybody's kind of doing that today. But honestly, there are several lakes I fish in north of here, north of Eagle River in that Phelps area, mm-hmm. Butte des Aires and Big Sand and lakes like that, where you go, the best spot on Big Sand Lake isn't even on the map.
Does it? That's convenient.
It's big.
Yeah.
It's a big littoral zone in the middle of the lake. It's called the Big Bar, and it's in the middle uh-huh. of the lake. And you buy a map, and most of these map books, they're silver. You look and you go, and most of the mapping systems, where is this reef, this Big Bar, this uh-huh. big? It's not even on the map. So where I'm going with this is that you will constantly learn things on a body of water that will eventually separate you from the rest of the crowd, because, you're taking the time to really decipher. And that's why I am adamant about this, is that instead of just running around and trying to find a magic lake, is take a favorite body of water, one that you really want to learn, mm-hmm. or that you've got family history with it, or you've caught a couple big fish on it, or whatever it is, or you heard it was good, and then just focus all your efforts on it,
mm-hmm.
and focus all your efforts, and don't be running around helter skelter. You focus all your efforts on this, and then learn it better. Now, even my young protege anglers,
the guru,
then the guru, the guru, guru, the guru is a classic example.
Absolutely,
the guru's going to hear this podcast, and he's going to be chuckling because he's got his home water mm-hmm. that he lives on a semi-private lake,
right?
And and for a long time we called him Top Raider Tyler,
right?
Because all he did was throw a top raider. Says Tyler, I says, if you really want to be the musky guru, I says, you got to get off your lake.
Right.
And you got to learn, you got to take a couple other lakes and learn them and, challenge yourself to learn. And you need to put that top raider away and take the lake you fish, take the lake you fish, and now relearn it with a crankbait and with the concept mm-hmm. that I showed him. And he came in one day and he says, I'm just shocked. I said, what? He says, I thought I knew everything. He's like 22 years old. He's like, I thought I knew everything about this lake. And I'm looking at him going, you don't know everything about this lake.
Yeah, really.
No. So listen to this. So he goes out with the dude. He lets the dude fish with him on his private lake one day. Uh-huh. And the dude's going, hey, have you ever fished this deep pile of boulders over here? Oh, I didn't even know they existed.
Right.
Hey, have you ever, and it just goes on and on and on. Right. And pretty soon, Tyler's going, okay, I'm dialing in. I'm learning this lake all over again. Yeah. And this is where I'm going with this, folks. Now, he's about Tyler's 22, and he is, folks. He is the musky guru. And we love the kid, and he's learning by leaps and bounds. And you can see the big fish he's catching, and he's catching them on depth readers and everything else now. But the thing where I'm going with this is, okay, he's 22. I'm 65, and I'm still learning these waters.
Yep.
Still learning them. So it's a never-ending process.
Man, I'll tell you one thing. You were talking about points, and we sort of got a little bit of nostalgia old school in there, right?
Yeah.
And for people, if you want to figure out how to fish a point, I'm yet to find a better way than dropping a marker buoy on that guy. I'm still doing that. Where
that's good.
Is drop, you know, this old school marker buoy, so you have a visual representation. You find the end of it. You know what I'm saying? And just some of this stuff is like, you talk about the modern tech. I've got side scan. You've got ridiculously good side scan with your Hummingbird and all this stuff. And you know, run the play and keep it simple, because some of this stuff has been working for nearly 100 years now in musky fishing. You know,
that leads me to a great, great story. Folks are going to love this. So, you know, back in the day when you throw a marker buoy out, you just attract attention. So there's two things I wanted to point out here. See, few people even have a marker buoy in the boat anymore. They just hit a waypoint, you know.
Right.
But then you're always trying to look at that sonar and chase that waypoint around.
Right.
But throwing a marker out was easy because it was a visual. You could always see it.
Yeah.
But it also, everybody else in the lake could see it. So two things. One of the things I used to do was I would throw the marker off the spot, you know, and then just use it as a reference to, you know, I knew that the bar was, you know, the hump I was trying to fish, or the stump or the weed patch was like 50 yards, you know, to the southeast of that. So when people would pull up and they'd be fishing around the marker, they go, what is he fishing over? So I used to do that as just kind of a diversion.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I drop one right out in the middle of the lake, so people would go, you know, what's going on here, man? You can see them driving around with their sonars trying to find out what you're looking at.
Yeah.
But markers attract attention.
Oh, yeah.
So get this. So this is a trick I learned from Roland Martin way back. Right before we went out fishing on one of my good guide lakes back in the day on the Cisco chain, the big lake in the Cisco chain, Roland's grabbing a pile of sticks and reed bulrushes and stuff, and he throws them in the boat.
Right.
And I thought, what is he doing? You know, what is this all about?
Right.
And we pull up into a spot, and he goes, we're starting to catch some walleyes. He says, you know, he's trying to do a little TV stuff. He says, so Joe, tell me a little bit about son. He says, son, tell me a little bit about this. I said, Roland, this is bar 205. He says, why do they call it bar 205? I says, because I got 205 walleyes off this with some clients in one afternoon.
Oh my God.
He looked at me and he went, you got to be kidding. I said, no, 205. I says, and we're going to try and beat that today.
Right.
We didn't, but we caught a bunch. But anyways, you know, every time, you know, we got into a good batch of fish, Roland would take one of these sticks and he would tie a piece of fishing line off it and an old jig, and he'd throw it overboard and would sit on top of that spot.
Right.
And so you could not see that stick.
There's no way. Yeah.
You know, if anybody else couldn't see that stick, but you were close enough, you could see that stick floating around out there. And I said, so this is an old Roland Martin trick. He says, son, he says, I could go back in my day. He says, I could go down a flatter shoreline. He says, I used to do this a lot on flats back in my days on Sandy Cooper when I was a guide.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and I'd mark every big bass spawning bed with one of these things.
Right.
He says, and I go there and just dunk, dunk, dunk. He says, wouldn't even drop a line to come back and be fishing this spot. You know, and I could pull right up on that spot and bam, hit these fish one after another. And that was his, you know, one of his great reference points. So it was a marker that nobody even could see was there.
that's awesome.
Pretty cool, isn't it?
That's pretty sneaky. I might steal that.
He's pretty sneaky.
That's a good one. Man, I'll tell you one thing on the marker buoy thing, and I know we're working on some night fishing stuff for everybody, and you've got so much you can say on that. Just as a helpful hint, I've been putting glow sticks on those things at night. And that's a really easy way to fish those break lines and those shallows too, by the way.
Little
thing is, and we'll get to more into that, but man, I can't thank you enough for delving deeper on this subject. I know we've got a lot of users that wanted to learn that, man, and That's big stuff, and I'm sure here we'll work on. Definitely, we're getting people asking already about the open water stuff. We'll cover that here real soon, too. But epic information, Joe. Thank you so much.
It was fun, and you know, folks want to see more visuals on this, too. They can also refer to the vlog, which is up on Muskie 360 right now, too. And you can see I have got a lot of graphics and visuals on the vlog, and it's real popular. It's the most popular vlog I put out so far, and we're just trying to help our fans, our you know, our viewers and our listeners. We want to just help them be more successful, and that's what this Muskie 360 app is all about. And if you ask the question, if you want this subject covered, just tell us what it is, and we'll do it.
The Muskie 360 podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.